view.
Not a natural scorer.
To be honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Alongside my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We welcome you to the program. You can reach us in studio. Best way to do so is via Twitter, @IllegalCurve. If you call us, we're probably not going to answer, so do it via Twitter, @IllegalCurve. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets, Manitoba Moose news. IllegalCurve.com is the place to go for that.
I might answer.
You might answer the phone?
If somebody called, I might leave the microphone and go pick it up.
Sure, you never know what they're calling about.
Yeah.
Maybe they're calling to wish you good luck, calling to maybe wish you a happy birthday. So I have to start the show by, of course, wishing both you a happy birthday tomorrow, my father a happy birthday on Monday, the big 7-0 for Sheldon / Dad, and producer Rory also shares the same birthday with you. So, gentlemen, both of you, happy birthday, gentlemen. Good to see you on this Saturday morning. And salutations on your birthday.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Rory and I are birthday brothers.
Birthday brothers, yeah. Maybe I'm not even going to go anywhere else there. I was close to saying something else, but I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, we're going to have to celebrate.
Big birthday bash, going to big blowout tonight. You know, the salute to Ezzy. You know, that's exciting for the city.
Yep, there's going to be a nice little party festivity tonight and tomorrow. I like to make it a birthday weekend.
Yeah, sure. Well,
you know,
there's a big golf outing taking place after the show tonight.
Well, I don't know if that's going to happen with the way the weather is right now, but
sure. Hopefully
it happens.
Yeah, no,
I appreciate it. And also, happy birthday, as you mentioned, to Sheldon.
Sheldon / Dad.
Saw him at the Bombers game 2 or 3 days ago, and he was looking very handsome.
Yes.
And I'm wishing him a happy birthday. What are you guys doing for Sheldon's birthday?
We're going to, he wants to keep it very low key this year, even though it's his, like I said, it's his 70th birthday. He just wants a nice family dinner or family lunch. He wants to spend some quality time with his granddaughter, I think, more than anything. He doesn't really care if I'm there or not. He just wants the granddaughter to be there.
Is Anders the magician going to be there?
I'm not sure if Anders is going to be there or not. I haven't made the arrangements. It's possible somebody else in the family has made the arrangements. Anders, of course, was at my wife's 30th birthday last year because every 30-year-old has a magician at their birthday party.
Well, I remember last year I was trying to give him an extra $20 to make you disappear, but he couldn't do that.
Couldn't quite do that. Yeah. There's a limitation to his to his skill set, apparently. Anyways, we start with the Winnipeg Jets news of the week as the team both signs Jack Roslovic to an entry-level contract and re-signs RFA Brandon Tanev to a one-year deal. We'll start with Roslovic because I think to most Jets fans, this move sort of came a little bit out of left field. You'd heard some rumblings in and around the draft that maybe he was looking to leave Miami of Ohio because his rights had been traded, his OHL rights had been traded from Flint to the London Knights. And, you know, the London Knights are the perennial powerhouse of the OHL, really, of the Canadian Hockey League. And so that was a bit of an interesting move. But then Roslovic himself came out, said, you know, I'm not really interested in leaving Miami of Ohio. That proved to not be the case, as earlier this week he signs a 3-year entry-level contract with the Winnipeg Jets. It's an average annual value of $1.1375 million. Surprised about the move by Roslovic to leave college, start his professional career, and where do you see him playing this coming season, given that he has three options to him, the Jets, the AHL Manitoba Moose, because he came out of the USHL, so he's eligible to go to the Moose, or he can go back to Canadian Junior with the London Knights.
Yeah, it's an interesting signing, Drew. We didn't expect Jack Roslovic to necessarily sign his entry-level deal this year. We certainly expected it to be next year, but I think there's a 99% chance that he plays the entire season with the London Knights.
Really?
He was there in London a couple of days ago meeting with the team. He's best friends with Matthew Tkachuk, who could easily spend a chunk of the season in the NHL. But needless to say, he has the opportunity to play with a Matthew Tkachuk, to play with an Olli Juolevi, to play with, as you mentioned, the defending Memorial Cup champion. So I think that there is a very slim chance that he spends any time during the regular season with the Manitoba Moose. He's certainly not going to play for the Jets. We know that.
Do we? I mean, he's going to come to try. I mean, I would be surprised, but this is a guy who certainly is a first-round NHL talent.
With the amount of young players, Drew,
it would be a surprise.
Onto the team. Like, we're talking about players like Nick Petan, Marco Dano, Brendan Lemieux. You could even throw in a Joel Armia. They're going to have trouble cracking this lineup with guys like Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor entering their rookie seasons in the NHL. So I would be absolutely shocked if Jack Roslovic plays in the NHL. Maybe he plays at max 9 games, but even that, I wouldn't expect that. So I think he plays, I mean...
Let me interrupt you. Let me stop you right there. So you expect that, you know, he's going to come to Winnipeg Jets training camp. That much is clear, and he's going to be at the rookie camp or the the Young Stars tournament in Penticton, of course, yeah. Coverage of which will be here on TSN 1290 coming up in September. So you would expect that if he doesn't make the Winnipeg Jets, you would expect that he's going to go to the OHL's London Knights as opposed to the AHL's Manitoba Moose?
Yeah. And I don't even think it's a question. I realize you could make the argument for that, but if you look at his development, he's better suited to play a year in the OHL, play on a really good London Knights team, and get even better and play more games than he was in NCAA. And so I think it's a smart move for Jack Roslovic. You're playing on a really good program with the London Knights. The Hunters do an excellent job in London. They're a perennial powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's put on weight this year. He looked really good in development camp. I've only seen him play a couple of times. I saw him play once at development camp. But he's certainly gotten bigger. He's a good skater. He's definitely got a scoring touch. And he has a bright future ahead of him. So it's an interesting move for him. You've seen that in the past with other players. And with Jack Roslovic, I think in this case it's the right move.
Okay. I'm a little surprised that you're so steadfast and you think that he'll be with the London Knights. If you're Jack Roslovic yourself, I mean, obviously you're not, but let's put it in your, if you're in your own shoes, do you want to go play junior? Or would you rather, you know, start your professional career, you know, with, you know, the Moose and everything that comes with being a pro hockey player? Or do you think you've done enough of the sort of the more amateur side of the game, be it the NCAA or be it the, you know, the OHL's London Knights?
Well, I think it's just a question of how difficult it's going to be for him to make the Jets. Like, we could go over the roster. We've already gone over the roster.
Sure.
Like, who's he knocking out, and why would you want to play him in a fourth-line role when you have other players that you've already got under contract that could play those roles? I think it's going to be very difficult for him to make the Jets out of training camp, and I already mentioned why, because of how much depth they have at the position right now. And I think for the Winnipeg Jets, if it was between the Manitoba Moose, a young team who we know most likely aren't going to be very good next year.
They're not going to be. I think it would be surprising if they were a AHL powerhouse, certainly. I think they'll be better than they were last year because they have more talent now than they did last year. But
they were awful last year, so it's pretty tough to not go up, right?
Sure, I agree. I would agree with that.
So I mean, you asked me, and I think without a shadow of a doubt, he's playing for London next year.
Okay. I like your adamant nature there. That's a strong take. So I
do you have information that I don't have?
I don't have information that you don't have. I just would be, I'm not as 99% sure as you are. And I totally appreciate your point of view. I think that if a player, it would be one thing if the Moose were a real veteran team, I think, this coming season. I think the fact that the Moose themselves are going to be on the younger side and he can maybe develop with some of the younger Moose talent, be it Brendan Lemieux or be it Nick Petan or be it Marco Dano. I mean, depending on who makes the Jets and who doesn't make the Jets. I'm not as convinced that the Manitoba Moose might not be a destination for him to maybe get some more familiarity with players that the Jets organization would hope he would play with at an NHL level later on in his career.
Well, there's still a good chance that'll happen the year after.
Sure, it's possible.
He's 19 years old.
Right.
So just because he plays for London doesn't mean he's going to go right to the NHL.
You're
right.
No argument. So, I mean, it'll be an interesting one to see how, because he's unique in that he does have the three options available to him. You know, most players at that age don't have the Moose AHL option.
It's really two options.
Well, I mean, if he comes out and has a terrific training camp, I don't think that they're automatically going to send him down. I think he would have to have a tremendous training camp. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think it's a guarantee that he doesn't get at least a sniff of NHL action. He's a first round talent. He's not like it's.
I think it's a guarantee that he doesn't play in the NHL this year. But you can have your opinion.
We will each have our opinion on that matter. The other signing by the Winnipeg Jets earlier this week, Brandon Tanev gets a one-year, two-way contract with the Jets, pays him $874,000 at the NHL level. He was, of course, signed by the Jets towards the end of last season as an undrafted college free agent, played three games with the Jets at the end of the year last year, did not register a point. Tanev, another guy who's going to be in that dogfight for the bottom six, bottom three spots on the Winnipeg Jets, playing a wing there. I mean, it's just another body that's going to have to scratch and claw to try and make the NHL team.
Yeah, don't see Tanev making the Jets this year. He'll be with the Moose this year, but certainly a guy that has an impressive NCAA pedigree, a guy that we know scored the game-winning goal for Providence in the Frozen Four, a guy that has really good two-way ability. I don't see him projecting to a top-six winger or forward at the NHL level. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that, as you mentioned, he's going to be a veteran on this Manitoba Moose team. When you consider how many young players this Moose team has, there are more younger players coming in, a guy like Brendan Lemieux is another guy that's most likely going to play for the Moose next year, and he could possibly spend a little bit of time with the Winnipeg Jets. He's going to be another one of those guys that's going to be tough for him to crack the lineup with some of the other veterans that are in the bottom six right now, but certainly a guy that I thought was a very savvy signing by the Winnipeg Jets. Tanev, of course, brother of former Moose Chris Tanev, so there's that Manitoba Moose connection there. Mm-hmm. But certainly a guy that has a lot of ability, comes from college with a lot of fanfare. Another good signing. And, you got to give Cheveldayoff credit, Drew. At this point, he's only got two RFA left. And, of course, the big one being Jacob Trouba.
Yeah. I would expect LaPon will probably get done in the next week or so, just because there's no real reason why that should be controversial at all. It'll be a two-way contract for J.C. LaPon, I would imagine. I mean,
probably.
He's got nine games at the NHL level. He's got that one assist. So I think he'll get a two-way contract, and he'll be another guy in that fight for the bottom, the fourth line or a bottom six role with the Winnipeg Jets. And we've talked about it, week in, week out, Ezzy. The number of players that are going to be scratching and clawing, and the amount of competition for that bottom six in the Winnipeg Jets is the most it's the most severe competition that we've seen since this team moved back to Winnipeg.
Well, and that goes back to what I was saying about Jack Roslovic and why I don't think he cracks the Jets opening night roster. And granted, Drew, not many people thought Nick Petan would crack the Jets opening night roster last year. So I could be wrong about that, but when you consider the Jets brought in a guy like Sean Mathias, right? And then you're going to have other players like Joel Armia and Marco Dano really trying to establish themselves, because neither of those guys have played a full year in the NHL. Mm-hmm. But those guys are going to be in the bottom four. Then you have guys like Alexander Burmistrov and Adam Lowry that are going to be fighting to keep their third line spot, but potentially losing that spot and getting bumped down to the fourth line. And then you're talking about playing with guys like Andrew Kopp and Chris Thorburn. So there is going to be a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard for guys like J.C. LaPon and Brandon Tanev to crack the lineup. I think they will spend some time with the Winnipeg Jets. I just don't think it's going to be a significant amount of time. I'd bet that those guys would be playing 50, 60 games in the AHL next year.
The young guys on the Jets, and particularly I'm speaking of Armia and Lowry, have a leg up on some of the other competition simply because they're under one-way contracts. There's no effort involved in if it's Armia and Dano and they're both at the exact same level at the end of training camp, Armia is likely to get the spot, I would imagine, because he can't go down to the AHL without clearing waivers, whereas a guy like Dano, who's still in his entry level contract, can be sent down and the Jets don't have to risk losing him to another team. I think that gives those guys a leg up. But to the same point though, I mean, you mentioned Nick Petan impressed the team enough last year at training camp that he won a job. Now I think that's inspiration for a lot of these other young guys and says, look, if we have a good enough training camp, if we go out there and prove our worth, this team, this organization, it's not an automatic we're going to get sent down. They'll give us a shot if we prove it during training camp and during the exhibition season.
Well, that's just it, though, Drew. If a rookie aside from Patrick Laine mm-hmm. or Kyle Connor makes the team, or a player on a two-way contract makes the team, so you can throw in Brandon Tanev if you want in there. Yeah. If one of those types of players makes the team, you're going to have to either send a player on a one-way contract down to the HL, or you're going to have to make a trade.
Yeah,
because there has to, there, right now the Jets have too many forwards. I mean, we haven't even mentioned a guy like Anthony Peluso. Like, does he play in with the Jets at all next year? I mean, is there any room for him?
I'd be surprised if there is. I can't foresee how he's done enough at any stage in his career, be it in Winnipeg or before that with St. Louis, that would say that he deserves an extended look with the Winnipeg Jets over one of these younger players.
But it's even more simple than that. The Jets just have too many forwards right now under contract, right? Mm-hmm. And too many guys that could possibly, who are on two-way contracts, make the team. So it's almost a numbers game.
It certainly will be a numbers game, and it'll make the training camp and the exhibition season for the Jets probably more interesting than any other one in the past 5 years that the team has been around. Let's go to break, and when we come back, we'll look at some of the signings in the NHL this week. Number of different players avoided arbitration. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ducks squirts Lucius Kucherov. Killorn hangs on, shoots, he scores! What patience for Alex Killorn.
About time, here comes Killorn racing from one end to the other. Not again, score!
Long stretch pass. Finds Killorn, stick across the line, he's in a line!
Alex Killorn of the Tampa Bay Lightning scoring on the ice and off the ice this week as he signs a 7-year contract with the Lightning Bolts. $31.15 million, an average annual value of $4.45 million per season for the 26-year-old winger. A nice contract for Alex Killorn. Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times is going to join us in about 10 minutes' time to talk about this contract. But before that, Ezzy, your thoughts. They avoid arbitration with Killorn as they had an arbitration hearing set for earlier in the week. Instead, it's a 7-year contract, $4.45 million per season. Good value for the Tampa Bay Lightning, or is this going to be a contract that, given their rapidly approaching salary cap difficulties, because they have to get Kucherov under contract, and next year they have to get Andre Palat under contract, is Killorn a guy they could have maybe done without in order to keep Kucherov and Palat? You know, are you okay with the $4.45 million per season for the next 7 years?
Yeah, you know, Drew, I'm a huge Alex Killorn fan. And he's been exceptional in the playoffs, 31 points in 43 games over the last couple of years. Alex Killorn is a guy that was a late draft pick, relatively late, third rounder by the Tampa Bay Lightning, mm-hmm. and he's really emerged into an excellent player. He's been a top six forward for the Tampa Bay Lightning, so I like the contract. And sure, you mentioned that Nikita Kucherov is a guy that they also have to sign, but Hedman and Stamkos are under contract right now and long-term, and you know, you look at this Tampa Bay Lightning team, and that cap hit is probably not going to hurt them down the road. He's 26 years old, so it's not like you're signing a guy who's 33 years old and 3 or 4 years from now he's going to be on the decline. This is a guy that I think has a better year ahead of him, and you know, he's not going to ever be, I don't think, an 80-point guy.
No.
You know, but Alex Killorn is one of those players that really does it all. He's a guy that has that physical edge to his game. Very smart player. And as I mentioned, he always seems to elevate his game in the playoffs. And remember, the Tampa Bay Lightning were not supposed to go as far as they did this past year. Many people thought without Steven Stamkos in the lineup, they were going to be first round and done, right, Drew?
Sure. Yeah.
And Alex Killorn was one of those guys that was there every night for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I really like the contract. I like, you know, a good Canadian boy like Alex Killorn, who, you know, came into the NHL a little bit late, played in the AHL, worked his way up under John Cooper, and does all those little things right. He's one of those guys that, you know, teammates love to have on the team. So I like that signing.
For, you know, hasn't ever, his career high in points is 41. You know, he's usually about a, you know, he's a double-digit goal guy, but it's usually between, say, 15 and 20, give or take. So he certainly does, he's a two-way forward more than he is an offensive dynamo. But, you know, you look at the Lightning situation, and I mean, this is sort of, this is no insult to Alex Killorn, because he certainly has proven to be a very valuable member of the Lightning. But as things currently stand, they have $8 million in cap space, you know, today. And the three guys that they still, you know, they need to get Kucherov under contract this offseason. He's an RFA, and he's not going to be cheap because he's been a one of the best, you know, point producers in the NHL.
He'll make $6 or $7 million.
Right. And then next offseason, you have Tyler Johnson, who, assuming he has a bounce back year, is also going to demand a big ticket. And you have Andre Palat, who is also going to demand a pretty sizable ticket because he's turned into be a very good player for the Lightning.
Drew, I know where you're going here.
Yeah.
They can't sign all of them. Somebody's not going to be signed long term.
Right. So of all of the Kucherov, of Palat, of Johnson, isn't Killorn the one that you're probably most okay saying, you know, we just can't afford you?
I'll say this much.
Okay.
Steve Yzerman's one of the greatest hockey players of all time.
Sure.
He just signed Alex Killorn to a 7-year deal.
Mm-hmm. You saying that he? So you're saying
I think Steve Yzerman.
Who are you?
Steve Yzerman knows what he's doing.
Who are you to question the judgment of Steve Yzerman?
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, that's who signed Alex Killorn. So
it's a fair point. But
he made his choice, right?
He certainly did. But I think what you're going to see with Lightning, and this isn't about Killorn so much as it isn't just a function of working in a salary cap system. The Lightning are about to experience what the Blackhawks have experienced the last number of years. Maybe not this year, but next year, the Lightning are going to lose one of the members of their core.
Yes. Back to your point, the triplets can't all be signed to $6 or $7 million each.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got Stamkos, Hedman, and Killorn now all signed long-term.
And if Drouin continues the way he played during the playoffs last year, after his hissy fit and after, you know, water, if that's water under the bridge, and he continues to do what he did in the playoffs, Drouin is going to be an RFA next year, and he might also demand a decent contract.
What I see happening, Drew,
yeah,
is Nikita Kucherov is going to be signed long-term,
mm-hmm.
and I bet they would love to sign Andre Palat and Tyler Johnson long-term. I think they're going to have to trade one of those guys.
It seems inevitable just because the salary cap is unlikely to skyrocket. Unless the salary cap goes through the roof, which there's no reason to think that it's going to happen because the Canadian dollar isn't going to all of a sudden, you know, jump back up to, you know, being on par with the U.S. dollar, and NHL revenues aren't about to jump up through some, you know, the World Cup will help, but I don't think it's going to make a $5 or $10 million difference per team.
Drew, the Lightning are in a very similar situation to what the Chicago Blackhawks mm-hmm. were in.
Absolutely.
And the Chicago Blackhawks decided that their top four guys were Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, Marian Hossa, and then you could also throw in Seabrook.
Sure.
So maybe five guys mm-hmm. that are making $5+ million a year, right?
Yeah.
So the Tampa Bay Lightning, if you think about it, they're five guys, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Alex Killorn, Nikita Kucherov, and then one of Tyler Johnson or Andre Palat. You can't sign guys to $5+ million a year.
That's why that Ben Bishop, who's a UFA next season, is unlikely to be in Tampa Bay, I would argue, because they have Vasilevsky, who's proven that he looks like he's going to be a top-flight NHL goaltender. And Ben Bishop is going to demand a contract no less than the current $5.95 he makes per season. It's just not going to work out for the Tampa Bay Lightning financially that everybody is able to stick around. We'll talk more about that with Joe Smith, as I mentioned, in about 5 minutes' time. The Washington Capitals, they avoid arbitration with Marcus Johansson. They sign him to a 3-year $13.75 million contract. It's a salary cap hit of $4.583 million per season. You know, Johansson, is he a little bit, you know, you talk about the Washington Capitals and the big names, the headliner is, of course, Alex Ovechkin, and then you've got, you know, Nicholas Backstrom, and you've got Evgeny Kuznetsov. Is Johansson sort of a little maybe under the radar and underappreciated for what he brings to that Capitals team?
Perhaps. He's a very good player. I mean, when you're talking about Marcus Johansson, that's your second-line center. He can play wing. He's a guy that, you know, he's played in the NHL now for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a guy that is certainly a complimentary player, but certainly a highly skilled player who's very important to what the Washington Capitals do. I actually thought that this contract was a bit of a bit of a discount, I would say, for the Washington Capitals. I mean, Marcus Johansson's a guy that's certainly underwhelmed in the playoffs, I would say, Drew. He only had 2 goals last year in the playoffs. He's a guy they expected more out of. Sure. But then you could also throw in Evgeny Kuznetsov, yeah. And you could throw Burakovsky was not good in the playoffs mm-hmm. either. Those guys are obviously, you know, young players in their second years in the NHL. But when you're talking about Marcus Johansson, he's a very versatile player. So we were talking about this last week. I mean, we're not surprised that they avoided arbitration here.
No.
So Marcus Johansson, excellent player. You know, a guy I think that, you know, somewhat one-dimensional in the fact that he's all offense. He's a guy that you're going to put out there on the power play. He's not a guy that you're going to have to use in any shutdown role, but certainly has defensive capabilities. But, I think that, you know, in this particular case, the Washington Capitals got a pretty good deal here.
Sure. He, you know, similar point totals to Killorn in that he's never exceeded 47 points in the season. 20 goals 2 years ago is his career high. But, you know, another key, he's sort of a key component in that Capitals team, especially with that offensive group. He is, you know, I'm not surprised that they got him under contract because really nobody ever often actually goes to arbitration. But it's sort of it doesn't handcuff the organization to him for longer than the next 3 years so that they could, you know, when he's 28 years old, they could say goodbye to Marcus Johansson depending on how the next 3 years play out.
You know, I just mentioned that, you know, he could play center and wing. And the thing with him is that, you know, you've got Kuznetsov and Backstrom up the middle there, but, you know, if you need to use him in a second line role or mm-hmm. a third line role, but most likely, you know, with the talent they have on this team, he's going to play wing. But guys like that are really, really valuable. And, you know, they've added Lars Eller from Montreal, and, you know, Lars Eller fits perfectly into this type of system. They've got so much skill there. They've probably got the best group of forwards in the entire league, I would say. Certainly top five group of forwards in the NHL. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that signing makes a lot of sense.
One other signing, the Colorado Avalanche avoid arbitration with Mikhail Grigorenko, who they had, of course, acquired from the Buffalo Sabres in the Ryan O'Reilly trade last year. They signed him to a one-year, $1.3 million contract. Grigorenko is a guy who's never really reached his capabilities. He was a former first-round pick. Played, of course, for Patrick Waugh. Back in junior hockey with help me out here,
Quebec Ramparts.
Thank you very much. A guy, you know, 27 points last year, you know, only 6 goals. Talent, but hasn't really been able to put it together at the NHL level. So this is very much a bridge 1 year contract.
Well, you could look at it as a bridge 1 year contract, but I would look at it for a guy at 22 years old. You mentioned he was a former first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that shows you that the Colorado Avalanche aren't committing long-term, and that probably shows you that if Mikhail Grigorenko doesn't prove to them that he can play really wherever they need him to play. I mean, a guy like Grigorenko, you expect, you know, to go right into a top-six role.
Sure.
You know, and he had off-ice problems in Buffalo. That was part of the reason why he was traded, and he was coached by Patrick Roy. That's why Colorado showed interest in him. But he's only shown flashes because when he was given an opportunity in Buffalo, he didn't do much with it. That's why he was sent back down to the QMJHL.
Yeah.
He was pretty good in the AHL, but the problem with Mikhail Grigorenko is he still hasn't learned how to play the pro game. He can score. This guy can score.
He hasn't been able to do it at the NHL level, though, but I mean, your point about...
He also hasn't shown the commitment to play a different role, though.
Sure.
I think he's in a similar situation to a guy like Alexander Burmistrov, who thought he would come into the NHL and be guaranteed a top six role. Well, that's not how it works.
You got to work. You got to work to prove that you deserve that role, is what you're saying. Grigorenko, an interesting guy to watch for the Colorado Avalanche. They, of course, still have Tyson Barrie they're trying to reach agreement with. That'll be a very interesting case to watch in the next couple weeks. Let's head to break. When we come back, Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times joins us to talk about the Killorn signing, talk about the Lightning offseason, and to talk about their future salary cap issues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Nine:30 in the morning, Saturday, July the 23rd. A little drizzly, but it's nice and dry here in the studio on Pembina Highway. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel and Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from the Tampa Bay Times our very good friend Joe Smith. Joe covers the Lightning for that fine newspaper. Joe, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Joe?
Not too bad. Can't complain.
There you go. That's what I like to hear.
Joe, can you make it stop raining in Winnipeg?
I'll work on that. That'll be like the top three things in my to-do list for the summertime or the off-season. I'll work on that.
Yeah, you'd probably settle for rain in Winnipeg whenever the Lightning. I don't even know when you guys are coming to visit, but hopefully it's not in the dead of winter. A little bit chilly for you, Southern U.S. guys.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I always look at the schedule and make sure when I'm going there. Usually, it's been before. It's been in October, but I think I'm sure I'm due for a nice January. Frigid night in Winnipeg this year, so we'll see.
There you go. Something to look forward to. Joe, obviously we brought you on to talk about some of the Lightning. It's been a very busy offseason for Lightning general manager Steve Yzerman. Let's start with the contract that got done this week. That's Alex Killorn. He got 7 years. Obviously going to spend the bulk of his career now with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Are you surprised? We were just talking about this last segment. Given the Lightning's salary cap situation where they still need to sign Kucherov this year, and then next year they have to sign Tyler Johnson, and Jonathan Drouin will be an RFA, and Andre Palat. Are you surprised that Alex Killorn got the big 7 years, over $4 million a year contract, or is that just a sign of sort of just how valuable he might be to the Lightning organization, even though you might not see it on the score sheet with big 50, 60, 70-point totals?
Well, there's no doubt. I think it's a little bit of both. I think it shows how much value he does have with the organization. I think he may not be on the side of the arena or in the billboards around, but he does a lot of the dirty work in the corners. He plays so well with Steven Stamkos. He's a big body, and they don't have a lot of size up front, very versatile. And he's played at his best in the playoffs. The last two playoff runs, he's been as clutch. Well, besides Tyler Johnson, Nikita Kucherov, and Ben Bishop, he's been right there. So it definitely shows his value, and they see him as a core player. Now, a little surprising to see how long the deal was, and I mean, he knew he'd probably get around $4 million AAV in arbitration or a shorter-term deal, but I think it does show the commitment he has and Lightning has towards him being a key piece going forward. I just always figured or thought that maybe Kucherov might have been done first, but I know that with the semantics of RFAs, Arbrights versus RFAs without Arbrights, those ones get done quicker. But yeah, I think the length of the deal was a little surprising at first, but it also shows that how much value they put in a player like that, even though he may not rack up a lot of big numbers.
Joe, we want to get into the Victor Hedman and Steven Stamkos signings, but when you consider the three major signings that Steve Yzerman made here, signing Steven Stamkos to 8 years after a lot of people thought he was going to test the free agency market, when you consider that he signed Victor Hedman to 8 years, Alex Killorn gets signed to a seven-year deal, is it safe to say that Steve Yzerman, without making a major trade, has quietly had the best offseason of any general manager?
Oh, you can definitely make a strong argument. I think he also forgot Andrei Vasilevskiy, who signed a three-year extension as well to probably be the goalie of the future. And he still has one more year left in his current deal to be an RFA. So to lock up a goalie and your top center and your franchise defenseman is definitely, I think most general managers would take that. If you're going to the free agent market and getting those players, that'd be a offseason for the ages. So I think for them to keep Steven Stamkos, first of all, which was kind of in doubt for a lot of people's mind, and even Steve Yzerman was a little even surprised when he got the call a couple days before free agency that he was coming back, and to lock up Victor Hedman and not to avoid that kind of a saga for all year next year like it was for Steven Stamkos this year, to have him locked up on the first day he was available, I think you can make a strong point without going outside that they made probably one of the best offseasons so far, and it's still not over yet. They have still time Kucherov and Domestikov and get under the cap, so his work is not done yet.
Joe, we saw how good Victor Hedman truly was a couple of years ago when the Tampa Bay Lightning went to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Chicago Blackhawks, but did he really almost prove how valuable he is last year, considering that many people thought that the Tampa Bay Lightning were going to lose in the first round to the Detroit Red Wings?
Oh, I mean, I think anybody who's seen him play for a length of time, besides that playoff run against the Blackhawks, knows how valuable Victor Hedman is. There may be only 10 or 12 elite, number one defenseman in the league, and he's one of them. And so to have that guy locked up that long term, I mean, you see him the way he handles the puck, you know, he controls play. He's kind of how they, as he goes off the Lightning goes, the way he plays into the rush, and they like to use their D up in the offensive zone, and he's just so effortless the way he skates for such a big man. I think it's just he's becoming more of a complete defenseman, and you're seeing more of that balance of the offensive and defensive side. So I think that run was more of a coming off party as far as nationally or internationally people to see how good he is, but I think those who've watched him up close, those who've played against him the last number of years, have realized what kind of a lead defenseman he's turning into.
Joe, by the way, the Lightning are in Winnipeg on February 11th, so bring your Canada Goose jacket.
Awesome. Happy Valentine's Day, right?
Exactly. So. Joe Smith is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. Joe, you talked about Nikita Kucherov, and of course he's coming off of his entry-level deal, and this is a guy who is, you know, taking the NHL really by storm since he's been in the league. He's got, you know, after his rookie season, he's got two straight 60-point years. Are we looking at, you know, a $6.5-7 million deal for Kucherov? And if so, what effect is that going to have on the salary cap? You know, are they going to look to sign, get that contract done, and then look to try and dish out one of the maybe veteran players who might not be performing, you know, to the contract that they have? You know, Phil Pula comes to mind. Maybe Jason Garrison is another guy.
Well, I think you're about right. I'm not sure what the number will be, but you look at Philip Forsberg's 6-year, $36 million deal as kind of a market setter there for Kucherov, and Kucherov's had more playoff success the last couple of years. So I think you're looking at least in the $6 million annual average range. He went from $700,000 last year, and he's outperformed that one. So I think you're looking at that. I think he's a big part of their core. I would believe so. I think Arthur wants to get it done. And I think, you know, as he said, if he signs Domestikov and even Nesterov and Kucherov, he'll have to do some work to get under the cap by opening night. So I think you will see another deal at some point this offseason, whether it's Stoppel or somebody else, to try to get some cap not only for this season but for next season. And you also know Ben Bishop's contract will come off the books after next season if they decide to move him, which is a possibility considering they can't keep both goalies, you know, go after next year because of the expansion draft one will be taken. So there's a lot of some maneuvering he'll have to make after signing Kucherov. I believe he's another core piece of their future, so I'd be surprised if he, you know, is not locked up long term sometime this summer.
Joe, we haven't spoken with you since Stamkos signed during that crazy, you know, 20-minute flurry back in June, right before before free agency opened. You know, given how close it got to July 1st and Stamkos had been already able to take meetings with other teams, were you surprised when the announcement came out that Stamkos was going to re-sign with the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Well, I think I was surprised at the timing that was two before July 1st, but I mean, I wasn't completely surprised that he decided to come back. I think there was always a feeling, whether it was, you know, in the last October or even as he got to free agency, that he's always said to me and everybody else here that he wanted to stay in Tampa, that he loved it there, the organization, the city, the fans, the ownership, obviously, and supervisor, and respect him very much. So I think a lot of his rhetoric and what he said was he wanted to come back, but I think as it got closer to free agency, there was some more doubt. But if you look at all the suitors that he had a chance to listen to other suitors in that time period of the interview window. It's hard to make an argument that other teams, you know, offered him a better opportunity to win the Cup, which is what he wants to do first and foremost in Tampa Bay. I think that's what it came down to, other than this comfort level with the organization and wanting to kind of finish what he started, finish his career where it began as an 18-year-old number one pick. So I think there wasn't a complete element of surprise as far as that's concerned, but I think the timing of it, because he got so far to July 1st, people wondered why didn't he just sign in January. So that's kind of the more surprising part. But I think to listen to him talk all year long, like I had, that he wanted to come back, to see him come back isn't a complete surprise. It's more so how close he got to free agency and maybe go another way.
Joe, earlier you mentioned Andrei Vasilevskiy, of course, the young Russian goaltender for the Tampa Bay Lightning, signed the 3-year contract extension. Ben Bishop, of course, has only got 1 year left on his contract. He was the subject of trade rumors around the draft and as soon as free agency begun. Do you see the Lightning having to play Ben Bishop for the majority of the year and then letting his contract expire or trading him close to the trade deadline, even though that would leave only Andrei Vasilevskiy as your goaltender? But is it a foregone conclusion, I guess, that Ben Bishop isn't coming back with the Tampa Bay Lightning next year?
Well, I mean, I guess you'd never say never, but and I think there's a good chance that both start the season and both play for the first part of the season. But I think, you know, if you're looking at economics and all the guys that they signed, of Hedman and Stamkos, and sure to sign Kucherov for the $6 million and other guys to go. It's hard to envision having a goalie with a $7 million cap hit or more fit in that economic model going forward with the cap. So, in an ideal world, in a vacuum, you wouldn't trade Ben Bishop. He's one of the top goalies in the world. They love him. He's a clutch goalie in the playoffs, albeit injury issues there. But I think when you look at the cap picture going forward and the expansion draft coming up, I don't know if it's a foregone conclusion, but they have to move one of the goalies, and it seems as though with his cap number, he'd be more likely to go because of not only that, but what he could bring in return. So I wouldn't say it's complete 100%, but I think if you look in the writing on the wall, it certainly seems as though he'd be a high candidate to get moved at some point before the February trade deadline.
Joe, we'll let you go on this final question. Jonathan Drouin, we know the drama that surrounded him for a lot of the regular season. Come the playoffs, he was one of the best Lightning during the playoffs. 14 points in the 17 games played. Are we seeing has that experience and then the playoffs themselves matured Jonathan Drouin into what the Lightning have always hoped he would become, which when they drafted him third overall back in 2013?
Well, I think whether it was a maturity or not, I think all he ever wanted and needed was an opportunity and to be put in a situation to succeed. And I think you saw that come to fruition in the playoffs. And you saw him in the role he's capable of playing and the skills that he's able to use and the confidence that he was playing with, all the perfect storm of that came together in the postseason and they're being one of the more dynamic players in the playoffs. And so I think if he could build off that going forward, imagine him on a line with Steven Stamkos again going in next year. It would be a lot of fun for fans to watch. So I think a lot of dynamics into that process after the holdout and of him, obviously working his butt off and training to get ready to go. His teammates all welcoming in, both in Syracuse and Tampa, played a role, and also the coaching staff giving him the trust to do his thing and play to his capabilities to show to what kind of dynamic player. As John Cooper said, he'd be a dominant player in this league going forward, and they're hoping that they can be with the Lightning for a long time going forward too.
As an addendum to that question, Joe, sorry about that. Drouin, you mentioned the playing time and the opportunity. Part of that opportunity sort of came to be because Stamkos wasn't in the lineup. Do you expect that John Cooper is going to give Drouin more of an opportunity this coming season? Because it's pretty much the same team that was there last year when he couldn't get the opportunity through the bulk of the regular season.
Yeah, well, I think, the player, we never saw that kind of Jonathan Drouin in the previous year or so he was in the league. And so I think when you saw in the playoffs and his capabilities, I think there's no question he's going to get more of an opportunity next season starting off. The way he played in the playoffs, I don't think you're going to see him get buried in the fourth line anymore. I don't think you're going to see him lose some of that. I think as long as he works hard and as long as he plays his capabilities, I think you're going to see him with more of a role like he did start last season with Steven Stamkos. He started on the top line with Stamkos to start last season before some injuries and took his part. So I think he'll get that opportunity next season, and it'll be up to him to kind of show he can do it again.
Joe Smith covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. Joe, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us and providing some analysis on the Lightning offseason.
No problem. See you February 11th, guys.
We'll see you in February. Thanks, Joe. Let's head to break. When we come back, there was an honest-to-goodness trade in the NHL. We talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Convenient, I tell that much, but I mean it is what it is. I mean I'm happy with the way things have been going and whatever, and obviously would like to stay here for a longer time, but things like this happen, and I'm not too worried about it. I know that we all figure it out and I'll be fine, so I'm just looking for a move to New York now.
That is the newest member of the New York Rangers, Mika Zibanejad, acquired by the Rangers earlier this week in a trade for Derek Brassard. An honest-to-goodness NHL trade as a one-for-one, center-for-center, a 23-year-old for a 29-year-old. So let's start with that point. Are you surprised if you're the Ottawa Senators, would you have traded a player like Zibanejad, young, former first-round pick, I believe sixth overall, up-and-coming, cheaper, for Derek Brassard, 29, you know, under contract, you know, until 2019 at least, for 3 more years, but certainly at the later stages of his career compared to Mika Zibanejad?
Well, Derek Brassard at this point is a much better player than Mika Zibanejad, head and shoulders better player. And I'm not talking about possession, and I'm not talking about point totals necessarily. Broussard's point totals are better. He just was coming off of a career season. But we're talking about a legitimate front-line, first-line center in the NHL. And this is a guy who was an integral part of the New York Rangers team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals 3 years ago against the Los Angeles Kings. So, I mean, this trade is interesting, Drew, for a few reasons. We know the New York Rangers have had salary cap problems, right up against the salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a coincidence that Derek Brassard was traded right before Chris Kreider and Kevin Hayes were signed.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a coincidence.
Both of those guys avoided arbitration.
Right.
You know, they had arbitration hearings coming up this past week.
Right. So they needed the salary cap room. And we'll talk to Andrew Gross coming up in about 10 minutes here, Drew. But
yeah.
We thought that Rick Nash was a potential trade target. And when you're talking about Rick Nash, I think his trade value is even higher. And that's because of his goal-scoring acumen and what he's done at the international level and stuff like that. But I got to say this, though. I'm a big fan of Brassard.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's an interesting trade for the Ottawa Senators, because the Senators team has kind of been going sideways for many years now. They made the playoffs a few years ago and surprised a lot of people.
On the back of that incredible, I mean, that was lightning in the bottle,
yeah,
by
with
Andrew Hammond there.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a good team. And when you're led by Erik Karlsson and Norris Winner, and you have a lot of other good players there, supporting cast, I mean, it's been a competitive team, but it's been a team who's reached the playoffs and never really gone anywhere. Well, that's been the story of the Ottawa Senators franchise since they came back into the NHL. They've never really gone far in the playoffs. But back to this trade just quickly, yeah. Drew.
The losing to the Ducks of that 1 year where they really weren't tremendously competitive in the Cup finals.
They've had, I shouldn't say that they haven't gone far, but they've never won a Stanley Cup, and they've certainly haven't been to the Stanley Cup finals many times.
More playoff disappointments than playoff successes for Ottawa.
Yeah, those years they got knocked out by the Leafs in the early 2000s come to mind, right?
Right.
But when you're talking about Brassard, he was the subject, if you remember, the Gary Joyce book when he was drafted back in 2006, sixth overall.
A great read, by the way. You should. Gary Joyce spends a year in the Columbus Blue Jackets organization as a scout.
Because he was drafted by the Blue Jackets.
That's
right. And then traded for Rick Nash.
And then eventually, that's right. And then,
So Brassard is an excellent player. I mean, you're talking about a guy, he actually had his career year 2 years ago, 60 points, but he had 58 points last year in 80 games. He's a guy that is very durable, a guy, very smart player, but a very creative player, and a guy, again, who's had a lot of success in the playoffs for the New York Rangers. We mentioned a couple years ago when they went to the Stanley Cup Finals,
16,
almost won the Stanley Cup.
16 points in 19 games during that Cup run in 2014-15. Let me ask you this, though. As you look at Brassard, and his career year was, as you mentioned, 2 years ago, 60 points. That's probably where he's going to peak out. It's unlikely that at this stage in his career he's ever going to... He's not going to become an 80-point guy. He's going to be tops at the 60, maybe he's got a 65-point year career in him. And he's, you know, 29 years of age. You look at Zibanejad, who's 23 years old, and he just came off of a year of 51 points, and the year before that at 46 points. Zibanejad is still on an upward trajectory from my perspective. If you're the Ottawa Senators, could you be looking back at this trade 2 years from now and rueing that you gave away a guy who was the sixth overall pick who might still turn into be a... I mean, I don't think that we know what his ceiling necessarily is yet of an offensive player, whereas we do know what it is for Brassard.
That's a good question. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Zibanejad has a 75, 80-point season in him. I've always been a little bit underwhelmed by Mika Zibanejad. He's a guy that doesn't have a lot of emotion in his game.
Mm-hmm.
He's certainly a very talented scorer. He's a guy that has an excellent shot, a very good skater, very good stick handler, a guy that certainly would be an excellent addition to the New York Rangers power play. But certainly, when I'm talking Derek Brassard, I'm talking about an overall player. Like, I'm talking about, he's, to me, in the Jonathan Taves, Anze Kopitar class. He's probably a step below that class, but he's one of the, like when you're a center, Drew, you got to play all over the ice, and you have to win faceoffs, and you have to think the game, you have to be good defensively. Derek Brassard is the complete package. And the Ottawa Senators now, with this trade, have a number one center. And Kyle Turris, sure, he's an excellent player as well, but I think Derek Brassard is better than Kyle Turris. So sure, Mika Zibanejad could prove that he has a higher offensive upside. I don't know if he's will ever be as good of an overall player as Derek Brassard. And for me, the Ottawa Senators, by making this trade, are saying that they want to win now.
So this is I would agree with that statement, certainly, that the Ottawa, this is a, you know, Pierre Dorion, the Senators general manager, is saying that no longer can we continue with this sort of not tanking and not being really good enough to be a playoff team. This is a trade that says we want to be in the Eastern Conference playoff race next season, and we expect to be by acquiring Derek Brassard.
And isn't that the right decision, though? Because not only do you have now Derek Brassard, you went out and you acquired Dion Phaneuf
last year.
He's not a young man. I mean, he's been in the NHL now for 10 years.
Sure.
And you've got players like Bobby Ryan on the team, Kyle Turris. You got veterans on this team now. I think this team has to win now. And when you're talking about the Ottawa Senators, yeah, they have some good prospects in the system, but it's certainly not the time right now where you can say, okay, we're going to wait 2 or 3 years here and see what we got. I mean, Mike Hoffman has to get signed. Mm-hmm. I expect him to get signed. I don't think they can afford to lose him.
No, well, he's going to go to arbitration, and like he did last year. And I mean, Mike Hoffman.
Well, he could
sign
before arbitration.
Of course, he could. Right. I mean, he's got an arbitration hearing. There's no guarantee he actually gets to the arbitration period. But he's turned into be one of the best goal scorers in the league, coming off of 27 goals 2 years ago, 29 goals this year. The Senators' top six is certainly it's intriguing with Brassard, and it's probably an upgrade for next year. And maybe it's an upgrade for the year after. I'm just always hesitant with Mika Zibanejad, 23 years old. I mean, most teams don't willingly give up 23-year-old centers.
Well, they didn't give him up. They're getting Derek Brassard for him.
Yes, but even so, you don't often see a team trade a 23-year-old center for a 29-year-old center.
If you actually think about it, this trade has some parallels to the Weber for Subban trade as far as the age goes, right?
Yeah.
And different situation.
Sure.
I mean, defenseman for defenseman, forward for forward, and then you have the salary cap implications.
Right.
Brassard's salary cap isn't as long, obviously, as Shea Weber's. But
$5 million, and for the next 3 years, you're not too concerned about the salary cap hit there.
You know, you mentioned Pierre Dorion here. You know, first year as general manager, he's been, of course, the assistant GM there for years. But when you're talking about this move, I mean, again, this is a difficult move to make. Sure, Drew, you are giving up a player who has an upside. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am not maybe as high on Mika Zibanejad as others are. He's certainly a good player, as I mentioned. I mean, the guy can put the puck in the net. He's got skill. I just don't know if he's the total package yet at the NHL level. I haven't seen it yet. I don't know if he's a guy that makes his teammates better like Derek Brassard does. Like Derek Brassard, that year that they went to the Stanley Cup Finals, the line he was playing with Rick Nash,
mm-hmm.
right? So, I mean, you're talking about a bona fide NHL number one line, an elite number one line. He's an elite center at this point in his career. Took him a little while from when he came from Columbus over to the New York Rangers.
Yeah.
But there's still, I think, that this element here that Pierre Dorion is trying to say that he's going for it now. Because the Ottawa Senators don't have... They haven't been getting a lot of top five overall picks. They don't have a lot of these guys. Like you've got guys like Curtis Lazar and Colin White. Those are their top prospects in the system right now. There's some others, but you know, Matt O'Connor is a good young goaltender. But I think this team is in a situation where they really have to take the next step. I think they've kind of taken a step by getting back into the playoff picture and then taken a step back by missing the playoffs, and they had to do something to improve their team, and this is it.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Andrew Gross, he covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper, will join us to talk more about this trade and to talk about the Rangers offseason. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Andrew Gross. Andrew covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey.
And the Devils now.
And the Devils now as well, exactly. Andrew, good morning, and thank you very much for joining us.
Well, my pleasure, guys. How's it going? How's the off-season been?
Oh, off-season's been very good. You were sort of entering the quiet time, I guess, in the next couple weeks.
Andrew, I've spent way too much time with Drew. It's been torture.
I hear you. Yep. No, it's. I agree. I think most teams have kind of gotten through their off-season obstacle course, and now it's just a lot of it is just waiting for the guys to come back and start skating informally before training camps.
That's right. We sort of, generally people ask us, how do you get content for the show in August? And August is sort of the quietest month of it all. But before you know it, it'll be training camp and World Cup, and the season will be here before you know it at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Likewise, Andrew. Obviously brought you on your New York Rangers there, the team you cover for the Record newspaper. Certainly had a very busy week. We'll start with the trade, the acquisition of Mika Zibanejad for Derek Brassard. Was this trade as much about acquiring sort of a younger player, still with an upward trajectory, as it was as maybe shaking up the core of the New York Rangers, a core that seems as it's gone as far as it could go, particularly with that 2014-15 cup run?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were equal components to that. The fact that, I think they went into the offseason hoping it would be more of a different roster than it's going to wind up being. But that said, they also look at getting a little bit younger and also a little bit faster. Mika is a very, very good skater for a guy his size. And, it was kind of a equal exchange. He's going to probably slot into that number two center where Brass was. And, on top of that, Brass gets to go home. He's right across the river from Ottawa, so I know he's thrilled to get to play for the Senators. But, yeah, I mean, it was kind of a twofold trade for the Rangers. They save a little bit of money on the cap this year, although Mika will be a RFA after this season. So if he has a big season, it could be, he could, certainly make more than the 2.6 or whatever he's getting this season. But there was a component of the Rangers looking to get different people into that room, and I think this helps that way.
Andrew, are you aware if the Rangers have been trying to trade Derek Brassard for a while, because we heard that the Rangers were possibly going to move Rick Nash?
Yeah, I think Jeff Gordon has been on the phone with as many different GMs as possible, talking about a lot of different scenarios. I don't think it's limited to Brass, or there was talk that Derek Stepan, they had engaged in some discussions with Stepp's hometown Minnesota Wild. Frankly, if you're going to trade either Derek Brassard or Derek Stepan, I would stick with Derek Stepan. Which is not to take anything away from Brass. I just think Stepp is such a pillar for that team, and tends to be a little bit more of a consistent player. So and younger as well. So I like them hanging on to Stepp. They certainly, I think, would not have been adverse to moving Rick Nash in the final 2 years of his deal. It's 7.8 on the cap for 2 years. I think that would have been a huge shakeup. Frankly, I'm a little surprised that there was not more interest in Rick Nash. I know he, had an injury-plagued season this last season, but he's just removed from scoring 42 goals. And he's still relatively, he's not an old player by any measure, and there's no reason why he couldn't get back to 40. So I thought there'd be more interest in him. I think the Rangers engaged in seeing, you know, if they could move Chris Kreider, whether that made sense before they re-signed him. So I think they were involved in a lot of different stuff, but they weren't going to sell short on the dollar, and this was the one deal that made sense so far.
Andrew Gross joins us. He covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Andrew, to your conversation there about the different, you know, machinations that the Rangers may have explored throughout the course of this offseason, are they done, or do you think that there could still be a supplemental move to this, or was this Brassard, the Brassard for Zibanejad trade, the quote unquote big shakeup that or as big of a shakeup as you're going to see this year from the Rangers?
There's a chance that that's the way it'll play out, but I don't think Jeff Gorton has turned off his cell phone and is going on vacation for the whole month of August. I certainly think that he'll continue to explore opportunities to, make another trade or two. That's not saying, you know, if the market was so difficult and so slow that it took him until, July 16th, July 17th, whatever it was, to make this one deal, then there's no guarantee that the market's going to loosen up in August. That is the time when a lot of GMs do tend to try and take it a little bit easy. But I could see him making another move if there is something that makes sense. It just depends how willing the other teams are to engage.
Andrew, you mentioned Chris Kreider earlier, and we talked about Kevin Hayes a little bit. What were your thoughts on those two contracts? Those two players avoided arbitration. Kevin Hayes signed a 2-year deal. Chris Kreider signed a 4-year deal.
Yeah, I thought they were, you know, more so with the Chris Kreider deal. I thought it was a deal that worked out nicely for both sides. The Rangers buy back 2 years of Chris Kreider's unrestricted free agency, so they now have him under control until 2020. He'll be 29. He gets a chance to, get out onto the market when he's still, in the prime of his career. And the Rangers have got to hope that, that Chris can find, that next step in his career and score more than 21 goals. I think the expectation has always been for Kreider to, maybe get to 30 goals at some point and to just develop that huge body that strength he has into a more disciplined and focused game at times. As far as Kevin Hayes, just to get to your second point, I think the Rangers are just thinking that last season was kind of a sophomore slump, and they still love the potential this guy has, and they're hoping he can figure it out on a game by game basis. And 2 years at $2.6 million per year, it doesn't kill the cap, and if Kevin Hayes doesn't develop, it's only a 2-year deal. So again, I think it's a deal that's okay for the Rangers.
Andrew Gross joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show discussing the New York Rangers. Andrew, along those same lines as Kevin Hayes, JT Miller, another former first-round pick of the Rangers, signed a 2-year, $5.5 million contract extension, $2.75 million per season. Are the Rangers still hoping that Miller continues on that upward trajectory? 43 points last year, his best season in the NHL. Does he have still more that he can show from the Rangers' perspective?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first of all, JT Miller was, without a question, the team's most improved player last season. He's still just 23. And it's easy to forget, but last season was his first full season in the NHL. He had, he had gone back and forth between the Rangers and the AHL for 3 seasons. So, he figured out so much last season. The maturity showed, in the room, on the ice, he was like a different person. And it certainly showed in his play. And I think now that he got to this one level, there's no reason to think that he is not going to keep continuing to improve for the next few seasons. I think the Rangers have a really, really good player on their hands in JT Miller.
Andrew, I saw you were tweeting about this a couple of days. Of course, Brad Richards announced his retirement a couple of days ago. Brad Richards played three seasons, of course, with the New York Rangers, even though he spent most of his career with the Tampa Bay Lightning. He certainly had some really good years. Goes back to that 2014 Stanley Cup run that the New York Rangers, Brad Richards was certainly a big part of that. How would you sum up Brad Richards' time in New York, and what kind of legacy does he leave in the city of New York, even though it was a short 3 years?
Yeah, I think it was all encapsulated that in that Stanley Cup run. And if you remember, Ryan Callahan was, you know, he wore the C, but he was traded at the trade deadline. And even though Brad Richards never wore the C for the Rangers, there was no doubt who the leader of that team was through that whole Cup run. And, frankly, I don't think they make it to the Cup final without Richards' guidance and leadership through that time. I think he was hugely important to the Rangers. Obviously, you know, he came to New York to play a lot longer than he did, you know, wound up being bought out. But as Glenn Sather kept saying, you know, they changed the rules in the new CBA, and the Rangers' hand was forced. And to be fair, you know, the Rangers could have bought him out a season early, but they didn't want to do that because they really liked what Brad brought to the room. Obviously, you know, his play, you know, was not at the same level as it was with the Lightning, certainly, or with the Stars. But, you know, I don't think that diminishes what Brad brought to the Rangers. He was a very, very clutch player. And, you know, guys just looked up to him in that room. And it was very palatable, even when he was in the room, what the other guys thought of him.
Andrew, we'll let you go on this last question. Dylan McIlrath is, of course, a guy very familiar to hockey fans here in Winnipeg, given that he's a hometown boy here. Signed a one-year, $800,000 deal with the Rangers. But the most interesting part of that contract is if he doesn't at least play 42 games this coming season, he'll hit unrestricted free agency next year earlier than he typically would. Is that, you know, is this the coming year and the fact he has to play those 42 games going to force Alain Vigneault's hand and maybe give McIlrath that opportunity that a lot of people have thought he's deserving? Or is he going to, again, find himself sort of on the outside looking in when it comes to the Rangers' blue line?
You know, I don't know. The opportunity is hopefully going to be there for Dylan to get more regular play time. I mean, you know, to me, and I've said this, the Rangers games that had the most buzz and the most excitement to me were the ones when Dylan McIlrath was dressed for the game. But, you know, maybe Alain Vigneault is, you know, he expects a lot of out of his defensemen in terms of how quickly they can get to spots and how quickly they can get the puck going back the other way in transition. And, you know, it's clear that AV, he does not see something in Dylan's game. And maybe I'm not saying that clearly, but there's something about Dylan's game that AV is not 100% comfortable with. Whether Dylan can change AV's mind, you know, through training camp or through his play, I think that remains to be seen. And you know what? I think it's a smart contract for Dylan to take, because if he can't get regular playing time this season, then you know what? He really should go elsewhere and get another opportunity to be an everyday player. I personally think he can, you know, he can play, you know, 70, 75 games in the season and be an effective player. I'm not 100% sure yet whether he's going to get that chance with the Rangers or not. I think a big part is how training camp goes, and, you know, we'll take it from there. But, you know, I think the contract was written pretty smartly for Dylan to, you know, that it really is either, you know, do it this season for the Rangers or do it next season for another organization.
Andrew Gross covers the New York Rangers for the Record newspaper in New Jersey. Andrew, always appreciate your time and your analysis. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. Have a great rest of the offseason. We'll talk to you soon when the season starts.
Okay, looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Andrew. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Past 10 a.m. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Andrew Gross, but big thanks to Joe Smith talking about the Lightning and the Rangers. In case you missed either of those interviews, they'll be available on tsn1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Or just make it easy on yourself. Subscribe to the podcast, download it, get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Illegal Curve in your pocket at all times.
Yeah.
That's a horrifying thought.
Andrew Gross has covered the Rangers for many years now.
Mm-hmm.
He is a good friend of the show. We've had him on the show, I would say, for probably 6 years, maybe even the whole 7 years we've been doing the show. He's now picked up Tom Giulietti's New Jersey Devils beat,
sure,
with the Bergen Record, Fire and Ice, excellent blog. New Jersey Devils, you know, as an aside, are a very interesting team as well, not just the Taylor Hall.
Any excuse to talk about the Devils, let's go.
Well, we got Andrew Gross on. He's covering the Devils.
Yeah, like I said, any excuse to talk about the Devils. Go on, finish your statement. Come on. Is Marty Brodeur coming back too?
No, but you know, Andrew, we were just talking about this, back to the Rangers, because I don't want to make it all about my Devils.
You can talk about your Devils. I don't care. It's summer.
The thing is, this team right now, in my opinion, is still a playoff team.
Yeah,
and I think the Mika Zibanejad for Derek Brassard trade is a fairly even trade. I would give the Ottawa Senators the edge just because of how established of an all-around player Brassard is. But Zibanejad's still a good player. You know, he could easily play with Rick Nash on the top line this coming season. So it's still a playoff team. But I don't know if this team has, let's say, kept pace with the Lightning, the Penguins, the Panthers, kind of the new elite of the Eastern Conference.
Mm-hmm. I would agree that I think they're a playoff team, but I look at the roster and the defense isn't good enough. Henrik Lundqvist, while still a very good goaltender, isn't.
I like that defense a lot more with Keith Yandel there.
Well, sure, except the fact that Keith Yandel is now in Florida, so that doesn't work quite as well anymore.
Right, and you know, Mark Stahl, Dan Girardi, Ryan McDonough, good defensemen, but you know, injuries and age have taken a toll on those guys, they're not the same shutdown defensemen that they once
shutting down
were.
Crosby? Who's shutting down Ovechkin?
Well, right.
Who's shutting down Stamkos? Who's shutting down Barkov,
right,
you know, pick, you know, whoever on the Panthers. I mean, they're just not.
Well, that's why there's probably going to be opportunity for a guy like Dylan McIlrath. Like the Rangers right now, I think, are still looking for that right mix to get them back to where they were before. And they've certainly got a great group of forwards.
I don't think it's on the roster, though. That's the problem. They have a good top nine. I don't know. It's great. I don't see them having that, you know,
it's
dominant.
It's pretty good, though. When you consider, I mean, we know that you've got Derek Stepan and Zibanejad up the middle, but when you throw in Rick Nash and Chris Kreider.
He's coming
off a 40-goal season.
I know, but push comes to shove. I just don't trust him to do it when it matters most. I mean, his career on the international hockey stage has been fantastic, but when the Rangers need a key goal, particularly in the playoffs, I just don't trust him to go out and get it.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I also don't,
for the New York Rangers, it can't always just come down to Rick Nash, right? He's just a small piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, but once
you can't always just depend on Rick Nash to score all of your goals, right? And that's
fair
why
enough.
Goals have come over the years from other players.
I just don't think they're good enough to compete, like you said, with the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference presently constructed.
And having said that, they still have one of the best goaltenders in the world, even though Henrik Lundqvist might not be as dominant as he once was. If he gets hot come playoff time, Drew, I mean, what we're saying is completely irrelevant.
Well, he's still Henrik Lundqvist.
You
always expect that he's going to be able to step up that game, even though he's, you know, approaching 35 years of age. Let's look at some of the free agents that are still on the market.
There's still some good ones.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think does your list start with Chris Russell? You know, of the, you know,
certainly for defensemen it does.
Yeah,
you could throw Dennis Seidenberg in there as well.
Yeah, a little bit older, a little bit slower Seidenberg at this
stage.
Sure,
but he
can
still play in the NHL. Yeah, Chris Russell. I mean, Chris Russell's he's not Erik Karlsson.
Chris
Russell is a defensive defenseman.
But is he,
and he's an excellent one.
Is he a victim of the analytics? Because analytics guys don't like Chris Russell.
I don't think analytics guys like me either.
Well, they don't, but I don't like you either, and I'm not an analytics
guy,
so it might just be across the board.
The analytics guys might like my pizza possession statistics, but I don't think they like anything else about me. But and the reason why I'm saying that is I have been a little bit hard on the analytics guys at times. But back to your point, I don't think that Chris Russell has been a victim of analytics as much as he's been maybe a victim of the salary cap. And I think all of these guys right now, that's the unfortunate part about the salary cap. I mean, you're talking Jiří Hudler. He's coming off a 70-point-plus season a couple of years ago.
2 years ago with
You're
Calgary.
Talking about Radim Verbata, a former 40-goal scorer. Sure, he had an awful season this past year with the Vancouver Canucks. I'm not going to pretend that he hasn't. But
so did Hudler had a terrible year for the Flames before he was traded to the Panthers
sure,
as well.
Sure, but look back 2 years ago, Drew, he was a top-10 scorer.
That's true, yes. Two years ago with the Flames, he was fantastic.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, Jiří Hudler isn't all of a sudden a guy that can't still play in the NHL. I mean, the problem, I think, is Jiří Hudler and Radim Verbata, both guys in between the ages of 32 and 36 years old, guys that are probably going to command $3 to $5 million a year, I would say.
But at this stage, you know,
and those guys are getting, that's what I'm saying. Those guys are getting squeezed out.
Yeah, July 23rd. Are these guys looking at, I mean, some of them are looking at PTOs, I would think. And some of them are maybe looking at one-year contracts worth $1.5 million.
Well, first of all, if Radim Verbata and Jiří Hudler don't sign in the NHL, I would expect them to continue their careers in Europe.
Certainly. I would agree with that statement.
But I would expect a team to, yes, probably sign Hudler or Verbata to a one-year contract. But you look around the league and all of the teams that are having salary cap issues, the New York Rangers are one of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
The LA Kings have certainly had their troubles over the last few years. The Chicago Blackhawks don't have a lot of salary cap space. There are a lot of teams right now that could be potential landing spots for a guy like Radim Verbata or a Jiří Hudler, but is there cap room? Does he fit in? Is he going to be a long-term deal? I would agree. I wouldn't expect one of these guys to get a four-year deal, Drew.
No, but if you're a team that's looking for, you know, on a one-year contract where you need some offense, I mean, because that's what, you know, Hudler's providing. He's only providing you anything on the offensive side of the game, more so than anything in his own zone. But, you know, for Hudler, I mean, a one-year deal for that guy, see if he catches lightning in a bottle.
Oh,
again.
I agree.
I think there's great value there.
I would say Hudler is more probably desirable than Verbata. He's more of an all-around player.
3 years younger also.
Sure, but I mean, he's just a better player at this point in his career too.
I mean,
you could be an older player and still be good. We just saw Shane Doan again score 20-plus goals at the age of 39, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, age isn't everything. Jágr is another example of that, right? But when you're looking at some of these players that are still available, and Chris Versteeg is another guy.
Apparently,
that's available.
He's very close to signing over in Europe, apparently, which I'm surprised about because, I mean, as much as Chris Versteeg has bounced around over
still
the last number of years.
Still a very productive scorer.
Yeah. Apparently he's heading to Switzerland next year, which I'm surprised about because I thought Chris Versteeg, you know, you look at the number of teams he's played for. I think he's played for the Blackhawks 5 different times.
Well, he's been on a lot of teams.
I know, but I don't think it's for a lack of talent that he's played on all these different teams. I think he's just one of those guys that a lot of teams see something that there's appealing there. He can score.
But he's been inconsistent.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why. And he's a little one-dimensional. He's a guy that can sometimes be a bit of a liability in the defensive zone the way he plays. He's a little erratic at times. I think it would be safe to say that.
Yeah, but the hardest thing to do in the NHL is to score. And this is a guy who can score. I have trouble believing that he can't find... And I mean, I don't know what he's getting paid in Switzerland. Maybe he's getting paid. Maybe they're backing the truck up in Switzerland to you know, give him a real nice contract.
Yeah, maybe they're giving him cheese and chocolate. I don't know.
That would be enough for me to get me over there to play hockey. But you look at some of the guys who are still available. You know, particularly on defense is thin. You know, Kyle Quincy still available with the played with the Red Wings.
I thought Quincy actually might be a good fit for the Winnipeg Jets. And you know, Quincy's a guy that people say he's not very good, but when you look at the Detroit Red Wings, I mean, those are skilled teams. He's a guy that has a physical edge to his game, left side defenseman. I thought he might be a good option for the Winnipeg Jets as kind of a number 6, number 7 defenseman.
Sure.
So I agree with you. Quincy's another guy that, you know, because he's a veteran NHL defenseman, he's played in the NHL for a long time, he's probably going to want $2-plus million a year. He might have to accept $1 million a year.
I don't think any of these guys, on July 23rd, if you haven't signed yet, I think you're looking... I don't think you can ask for more than 1 year. I mean, Chris Russell, for a guy who, you know, it was a big acquisition at the trade deadline by the Dallas Stars last year, and whatever you might think of Chris Russell's game, he's got to be a guy who's probably sitting there that he's pretty disappointed that he hasn't had a multi-year, multi-million-dollar contract been offered to him yet. As far as we know, maybe he hasn't, he turned it down.
You know, you keep bringing up Chris Russell, but Chris Russell's a very valuable defenseman. I've always liked his game. I like those defensive defensemen that can block shots, have that physical edge to their game, chip in a little bit offensively, right, Drew? Mm-hmm. Chris Russell, to me, it's curious why the Dallas Stars didn't just re-sign him. I mean, because the Dallas, we had Mike Hyka on last week of the Dallas Morning News.
Sure.
And we asked him about the defense, and, you know, they went out and they acquired Dan Hamhuis, but they lost a couple of defensemen, losing Goligoski and Russell.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little bit surprised that they didn't keep Chris Russell because I thought he was pretty good for them. But again, I think that he will get signed. He's one of those defensemen that I think will be very valuable to a team. But when you're looking at this list, and we've, you know, talked about, you know, 6, 8, 10 guys here, there's a good chance that more than half of these guys don't get signed because there just isn't enough room under the salary cap to sign some of these players that are fringe NHLers at this point.
If you're close to 30, I mean, or you don't have really a dominant skill set, it's really getting a hard market for you out there. I mean, there's even young guys, Brandon Peary is out there still. I mean, he was, you know, acquired by the Ducks at the trade deadline. You know, he's a young guy. He's not going to ask for a lot of money by at all. He's still available. There are some intriguing names out there, but I don't think anybody's rushing to get any of these guys under contract. Probably looking at mid to late August for a lot of these guys at this point in time, I think.
Yeah, and again, that's what's unfortunate about this time of year for some of these players, because they wish that they had already signed a contract, and now they're playing that waiting game. They're trying to see if a team might, you know, take a nibble on a 1 year or 2 year contract, right? So that's the unfortunate part about this time of year, when you have guys that are going to arbitration, signing before arbitration, but then you have a lot of players out there who don't have a contract and they're not sure, you know, if they have a future in the NHL or they're going to have to find, you know, a team to sign with in Europe, for example. So some of these guys, you know, are hoping, as you said, that they'll get signed in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Some of them are going to have to wait till September and potentially get a PTO.
We'll see how it plays out when we come back. We talk about Brad Richards. He retired earlier this year. We'll talk about his NHL career. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
That, of course, from the Stanley Cup Final between the Lightning and the Flames. One of the better Stanley Cup Finals in the last, you know, 10 years, I would suggest.
That clip is awesome. I mean, when you're talking about that 2004 Cup run, I remember Richie and I and our friend Neil Rockman drove down to Calgary in the second round. But when you had Jerome Iginla and Vincent LeCavalier, you're talking about the respective team's best players. And Brad Richards, sure, was one of the team's best players, won the Conn Smythe that year.
Sure.
But you're talking about Iggy and LeCavalier dropping the gloves in the Stanley Cup Final. I love that. I agree with you. I thought that was one of the best Stanley Cup Finals
Calgary,
in recent memory.
Because Calgary really won that Stanley Cup Final.
Marty Jelena.
Yeah, the goal that never was, which cost the Flames the cup that year.
Yep.
You know, can you imagine if social media was around? If that happened today with the outcry on social media, the world would just burn itself to the ground.
There's a lot of people in Buffalo, though, that would tell you that they should have won the cup in 99.
Well, can you imagine the social media outcry if you know, Brett Hull's skate happened today as opposed to 1999? Exactly. Same sort of concept. Anyways, we play that clip because both Vincent LeCavalier and Brad Richards announced their retirements this offseason, Richards announcing his earlier this year. And it's sort of fitting that they both go out together because their careers have been tied at the hip so closely, be it when they were roommates, when they went to Notre Dame to play, you know, prep hockey, Notre Dame in Saskatchewan, not Notre Dame in Indiana, not or South Bend, Illinois, rather. South Bend, Indiana? Or wherever it is, I can't remember off the top of my head. To Memorial Cup champions in Rimouski with the Oceanic, to, of course, their time together with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Richards picks up a second Stanley Cup back with Chicago a couple years ago. You know, let's start with Brad Richards because he's the one who retired earlier this year. You know, your most, do you have a most, you know, a memory more than any other about Brad Richards? And then second to that, is he a Hall of Famer in your eyes?
First off, Notre Dame is South Bend, Indiana.
Indiana, yeah. I knew Illinois didn't sound
I should have
right.
known that. I've been in Indianapolis before.
Ah, okay.
So I should know that. But it's interesting, Drew. You know, you mentioned Brad Richards. You want to talk about first here. Richards and LeCavalier, to me, during that cup run, were such fun players to watch in 2004. And then you mentioned Brad Richards, of course, wins the Stanley Cup a couple of years ago with the Chicago Blackhawks. But when you think about the Tampa Bay Lightning, those two players have really become the face of the franchise, right? Bringing the first Stanley Cup to the city. And then, mm-hmm. of course, now Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman, amongst other players, Kucherov and Killorn, are now the new face of the Tampa Bay Lightning franchise. But you're talking about guys that you could certainly make the argument, and Ken Campbell in the Hockey News made an argument for and against Brad Richards and Vincent LeCavalier, Drew. They're probably two players that it's going to be tough for them to make the Hall of Fame. Like, when you're talking about Timu Solani, you know that he's going into the Hall of Fame for sure.
Sure.
One of the greatest goal scorers of all time. When you're talking about Richards and LeCavalier, I always thought that when LeCavalier was in Philadelphia, it was a little bit unfortunate to see that he was scratched at times playing on the fourth line, not really a productive member, finishes his career with the Los Angeles Kings, again, not being a very impactful player, kind of being one of those third or fourth line guys, right? But when you're talking about both of these players, they certainly had the longevity, they certainly had the Stanley Cup pedigree, they certainly had the international experience. Brad Richards and Vincent LeCavalier are different players. LeCavalier, earlier in his career, was more of a cerebral player, more of a goal scorer, whereas Brad Richards, more of a playmaker, a guy that could score, but certainly a guy that his assist totals on a yearly basis were double, triple his goal totals. But certainly guys that both had excellent NHL careers. And I don't know the answer. I would probably say that you can make the argument more so for Brad Richards being a Hall of Famer, just because of the way Vincent LeCavalier trailed off.
Sure.
I mean, Richards had 9 20-goal seasons.
He did.
And 2 Stanley Cups and a Conn Smythe Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good resume. And I think he was on the 2004 World Cup Canadian team, if I'm not mistaken.
He was. That's correct.
So, I mean, you throw that in there, and that's a pretty darn good career. 1,000-plus games. I think he was a couple goals away from 300, 900 career points, 900 and change, I think. So you're talking about a guy who, even if he isn't a Hall of Famer, Drew, he's a guy who will go down as an excellent NHLer. And a guy, we talked about it, he still had some really good years with Dallas after he left the Tampa Bay Lightning. And that 2014 playoff run by the New York Rangers, we just talked to Andrew Gross about it.
Yeah,
he was an integral part of that.
He certainly was. I mean, I think that when he was bought out by the Rangers, I don't think it was necessarily due to it's not like his production was nil. It's just certainly, it was a function of...
He was making too much money for the
type
of player he was.
Too much money for the player he had become. I mean, yep. the game sped up and he had slowed down just enough that he wasn't able to, wasn't able to hang around. But that being said, he was still productive for the Blackhawks during their Stanley Cup victory in 14-15. You know, his career highs, you know, 05-06, he had 91 points for the Lightning. And then again in 09-10, he had 91 points for the Dallas Stars. You know, I just don't see either of them as Hall of Famers. And I think this is my problem with the Hockey Hall of Fame, is that it's a little too watered down for my liking. I think there's players that are very good. But there's not players who, you know, the Hall of Fame in my mind is always for, it should be for the best of the best and the elite and the cream of the crop. And while Richards and LeCavalier were very good players, they just never, I don't know that they're necessarily, at least in the Drew Mandel Hall of Fame, which doesn't exist, but it exists in my own mind, I don't know that they crack it. They're very good and they're close and I'll listen to an argument for it, but I don't think they quite make it there.
No, it's a fair point. And whenever you have these debates, there are going to be people that think that one player deserves to be in over another player based on the amount of Stanley Cups they won or longevity. Like, Mark Recchi, in my opinion, should be in the Hall of Fame.
You know,
just for his longevity and what he accomplished, the Stanley Cups and all of that. But again, we're not going to have the Mark Recchi debate right now.
We've had it before.
But certainly Eric Lindros, I always thought was deserving, and he got in this year.
Sure.
But
what about LeCavalier? I mean, you know, LeCavalier.
Well, I would say Richards over LeCavalier.
Really?
I would, and to me, it's because of the impact that Richards had later on in his career, winning a Stanley Cup, and LeCavalier really trailed off. He wasn't a very good player with the Philadelphia Flyers. Well, certainly, he had a couple of good years with the Philadelphia Flyers, but certainly with the amount of money he was getting paid, they expected more out of Vinny LeCavalier. So I would certainly hear an argument for Vinny LeCavalier, but I think, you know, getting back to it, regardless if we think that they should be in the Hall of Fame, these are two excellent players who deserve the airtime, and they deserve to be talked about, because in their heyday, LeCavalier and Richards were just a great 1-2 combo for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they did it for many years. You know, LeCavalier, of course, sticking with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and then unfortunately had to move on to the Philadelphia Flyers. But his legacy, LeCavalier's legacy, will not be the end of his career. It'll be the 10 years that he had in Tampa Bay and the 100-point season that he had and the Stanley Cup that he won. That will be his
goal scorer. I mean, yes. You know, nowadays nobody scores 50 goals. And, I mean, he scored it at a time when, you know, there was even less scoring in the league back in 06, 07, sort of the dead puck era. But, I mean, he cracked the 108. He cracked the 100-point mark, getting 108 points.
Looking at his stats right now, actually, LeCavalier had 13 20-goal seasons,
mm-hmm.
and he had five 30-goal seasons, you know, two 40-plus-goal seasons. You mentioned the 52-goal season. So, again, we talked about before, LeCavalier is more of a goal scorer. Richards was more of the playmaker. But they're both great players, Drew. I mean, I've always been a fan of both of these guys. We talked about, you know, they've been part of the Canadian hockey system as well at the international level. So, you know, it's kind of sad. It's a bit of an end of an era, but nice that they go, I think, in the same time.
That's right. I don't think it's sad. I mean, they both, you know, sad wouldn't be the word I use. I would say apropos is almost the word I use. Two guys who are so connected throughout their entire careers, starting, as I said, in Notre Dame when, you know, playing prep hockey there,
yep.
and then the Rimouski Oceanic, then the Tampa Bay Lightning. It is sort of the symmetry between the two of them. It's sort of nice to see them go together at the exact same time. And if the electors to the Hall of Fame decide that they both want to go in, they might very well go in together in the same year, which sort of would put the finishing touches on a career that certainly had parallel tracks throughout the course of it. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Carey Price. The World Cup of Hockey is coming up. Lots more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Here's the tire now for Detroit. Moves that back to the point. Lash off, shoots at the fucking light. Out the other side, it's loose in front again. And now Smith wires a glove, saved by Price. He reaches out and takes it away from Brendan Smith. And Carey Price is having himself a night.
Music to the ears of Montreal Canadiens fans as Habs goalie coach Stephane Waite earlier this week pronounces Carey Price as 100% healthy, 100% restored is his MCL after a season in which Carey Price was out of the lineup for the majority of it as he had that knee injury, wasn't ever able to come back to it, but Stephane Waite reports the Habs franchise goaltender as being 100% healthy in time for the World Cup of Hockey, of course, coming up in September. If you're a Habs fan, Ezzy, you're the Habs organization, how comfortable are you with Carey Price making his real first significant return to the ice? First game action being the quote-unquote heated atmosphere of the World Cup of Hockey?
Yeah, Drew, I think it's a fascinating question. I don't know the answer to that. I imagine that they're somewhat nervous. I certainly would be, and that's because Carey Price only played 12 games last year. He came back from the injury and then got injured again, and the Montreal Canadiens season was a complete disaster. When you look at the World Cup, and we've talked a lot about the World Cup, when Richie was still on the show, we talked about the format and all of that. Certainly not, in my opinion, as important as the Olympics, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the NHL, the NHLPA would love it if Carey Price was there. Carey Price is the best goaltender in the world, in my opinion. And he wants to be there, I imagine. And when you look at Carey Price and what he's gone through, winning the Hart Trophy, winning the Vezina Trophy, being basically on top of the world and then tearing his ACL, MCL, and then missing most of the season. He's gone from such a high to such a low.
Yeah, let me just clarify. He actually never tore the ACL. He just sprained the MCL, and that's what took him the entire time to bounce back.
So yeah, I should know that. I tore my ACL.
Yeah, you still haven't bounced back.
No.
Yeah, well, you never actually rehabbed.
But I'm not the greatest goalie in the world, though.
Also, you never actually rehabbed. I think Carey Price probably did a little more rehab than you did.
Yeah, I just went to rehab.
That's
but,
right. The bar in Vegas.
Yes.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about Carey Price, I mean, I expect him to play in the World Cup, Drew. I think he's going to play in the World Cup, but you got to think that Marc Bergevin and Michel Therrien are probably going to be watching that, and they might be biting their nails a little bit when they're watching the World Cup. I don't think that you should be too worried. I mean, Carey Price is a professional athlete.
Sure.
I mean, he has some of the best trainers and doctors around him helping him rehab.
I think
in the offseason he'll be ready.
If he wasn't 100% healthy,
exactly.
There's no way they would ever let him go there.
Right, but it's more of a question of the Montreal Canadiens want him to be focused on training camp and the preseason, but unfortunately you have to come off of an injury and now have the World Cup. And by unfortunately, I don't mean that the World Cup isn't going to be entertaining for hockey fans. I just mean that it's not something that is necessary. Well, I shouldn't say that.
If you're the Habs, then
Carey Price could end up having an excellent World Cup, and he probably will, and that can actually benefit him going into training camp.
But if you're the Habs and there wasn't a World Cup here, let's say, you probably have a routine or a schedule for Carey Price that makes sure he gets enough rest, he doesn't overtax his knee, you know, that he's able to sort of ease his way in, maybe a practice off here or there or a training camp day off here or there just to make sure that he's fully healthy. When you have the World Cup, you don't have that freedom. I don't think he'll play every game for Canada. I think Braden Holtby will probably get a start at least in the preliminary round.
Yep.
But, you know, for Carey Price, when presumably he's Canada's number one goaltender, I think we'd both be shocked if he wasn't Canada's number one goaltender. But when push comes to shove and Canada needs a win, they're not going to be able to look at sort of, you know, how is he coming along in his rehabilitation. They're not going to be able to ease him into it. He's going to have to go straight into the fire of elimination round games where you might play three games in four nights or three games in five nights.
Yeah, but you know what? Just let me stop you there, Drew. Like, this is a guy that's played 60-plus games, 70-plus games in the NHL. He's played in the playoffs. Carey Price is not a rookie here. I mean, he's played a lot of hockey over his career. And as you mentioned, you know, just thinking about it here, the World Cup is in early September, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's not like Carey Price wouldn't already be in full-out training mode as far as being on the ice, being in the weight room, all stuff like that. So I actually think that this is going to be a positive for Carey Price to get right back into international competition.
Sure.
Because, as you mentioned, if he wasn't ready to go, the Montreal Canadiens wouldn't put him in a bad situation. So it looks like he's healthy and ready to go. And, you know, I think it's nice for Carey Price to start off the season with this international tournament. But I still don't think that means that the Montreal Canadiens aren't going to be a little bit nervous watching them.
Yeah, but I mean, I agree with you there, and it's probably to the point of they're going to be nervous. You know, if this was an exhibition game, you know, against any random NHL team, the first time he steps on the ice, they're probably going to be nervous regardless of what's going on. But the fact that it's such a dynamic atmosphere and quote-unquote such an important tournament, I don't believe it, but whatever, they're going to say it is, I think it sort of adds to the pressure and adds to the nervousness of Carey Price coming back here. Somebody else is returning from injury.
I love how you had that queued up with Rory.
Yeah, you don't know anything about it. You, of course, this is, God help everybody, the sound of Ezzy snoring.
I wasn't snoring last night.
You weren't snoring last night because please tell for the audience what the diagnosis you've been given was.
Well, you know, because you have to throw me under the bus and
right under the bus,
bring all my dirty laundry on air here.
Well, we've talked about your snoring on air more than one occasion.
Actually, I already tweeted about it, so I don't care.
Exactly. You tweeted about it. If you didn't tweet about it, if you didn't share your entire life on social media, I wouldn't feel the free rein I have to be able to run you over
the
bus.
It's a great birthday present, Drew.
Yeah, well, I'm nothing if not nice. Anyways, congratulations. You've been officially diagnosed with severe sleep apnea.
Yes, and last night was my first night using that CPAP machine.
Sure.
Shout out to Gary Lawless, who's been using a CPAP machine for many years.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, we have been friends for a number of years, decades at this point in time. We've gone on numerous trips, be it the NHL draft, be it, you know, NFL games,
your bachelor party,
my bachelor party, whatever. We've vacationed together a number of different times, and all of your friends.
By the way, that was a great cruise back in
98. Yeah, it was a lovely Dominican cruise. All of your friends have told you for a number of years that you have to get your snoring under control, that you have sleep apnea. Why now, after 10 years, what was the impetus for you to finally deciding that your snoring was out of control?
It was just time.
It was just time?
It was time.
It had nothing to do with a special lady friend who may have pushed you along the road to getting...
That might have had something to do with it as well, Drew. But...
I tell you that you need to get your sleep apnea under control, and when Richard tells you, no, I'm good, not a big deal, you guys can live in misery.
No, I've known
but when,
for a while.
But when Naomi, your lady friend, decides to, you know, tells you to get it under control, boom, you have an appointment within about an hour.
Let's just say that it was eye-opening to see how many times I stopped breathing in my sleep. Apparently, I stopped breathing. I did a home sleep study last week.
Sure, of course.
And apparently, I stopped breathing 50 times an hour. So anyways, I used the CPAP
machine.
50 times
an hour.
I used the CPAP machine last night. It was very weird because you have, you know, air going up your nostrils at a fairly high pressure. And it was a little bit weird. But I will say this much. Yeah. I have been told that I wasn't snoring last night.
Well, that's certainly a positive step. Let me ask you this. You know, you're wearing the sleep apnea machine, the CPAP machine.
Yep.
How does that affect your consumption of pizza while you're sleeping?
It's a little bit tough because my mouth isn't covered, right?
Right.
A lot
so
of
you're still
think,
able to chew and while you're sleeping?
Yeah. I've still been able to enjoy my late night Domino's, but thank you. I'm happy that I'm dealing finally with my severe sleep apnea.
And I can assure you on behalf of all of your friends, we are equally as happy that we no longer have to hear you snoring just that much. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Andrew Gross and Joe Smith. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres and Clear Lake Golf Course. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Next Saturday, best of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to take the long weekend off, but it's a best of show next Saturday. For producer Rory, birthday. For Ezra Ginsberg, happy birthday, Ezzy. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball later on today on TSN 1290.